This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
It is Danny and Gallant, your Mariners. They're above 500. A little bit of bobbing and weaving to get there over the weekends. Coming back for, really, I would say it's the third significant comeback this team has posted this season. One in each of their three series. Season opener, they came back from five runs down in the final three innings. Game six, they salvaged that game against the White Sox. They were down 4-1 in that game late before coming back. And yesterday, they were down 6-0 and dead in the water. And then the dingers started. Kyle Seager, Taylor Trammell, Kyle Seager again. And the Mariners walk out of there with an 8-6 victory and win 2 of 3 in Minnesota. You feel significantly differently about that team now than when we last talked on Friday.
Yeah, the power that's all of a sudden shown up, that's huge. Kyle Seager, a guy that we always talk about having slow starts, yesterday's performance, whoa, that was awesome. 4 for 4, 2 home runs, and there was a moment in that at-bat before he hit the home run where you could tell he was just peeved with a call of a strike. It was definitely on the border of the bottom of the strike zone. Maybe it was a strike, maybe it wasn't. He looked so angry in that moment. And then just a couple of pitches later, he just drives it out of the ballpark for the go-ahead 3-run homer.
Things did get a little feisty. Just overall in that series, you had 2 pitches up and in, one of which hit Ty France, and he did not like that, stared back out at the pitcher. You also had Scott Servais getting ejected for the first time this season. He was mad because the Mariners got warned after Byron Buxton was hit with a changeup. And Scott's point of view, and I said we were going to play that sound, we should get to that a little bit later this segment, was that, hey, you're not going to hit that guy in that situation. Have some awareness about the game. We're not going to hit, and if we are going to hit him, we're not going to hit him with a changeup. Like, let's be real now. But the story of this series, and over the weekend, how the Mariners got out of Minnesota, was the homers. This is a team that had 3 home runs in the first 6 games, and they hit 5 in the past 2, showing a little bit of power. We put together a montage of the comeback yesterday, which was fueled by the tater. Here it is, the Mariners coming back from a 6-0 deficit.
You know, just kind of dead in the water, not doing a whole lot, down 6-0 against a very quality opponent. And our guys just keep grinding out. Obviously, Seager's had a huge day. Seager's carried us today, but the first home run getting us going.
There's a high drive right field, and that's going to leave the ballpark. Home run, Kyle Seager. His first of the season. Mariners on the board here in the sixth.
Trammell on top of that, kind of gets you wind back into the dugout.
And hard, deep right field. Trammell taking a look. That is out of here. 3-run homer. Taylor Trammell and the Mariners making big noise here in the sixth.
Now the power's starting to come. Slow, hit some home runs out of the gate, but now you're starting to see guys, you know, settle in and find the stroke a little bit. And there were huge home runs today. We don't get back in that game unless we hit the ball over the fence, and we did it today.
Fly ball, right field, deep, deep, deep.
The last one, the most spectacular. I'm really enjoying what I'm seeing out of Kyle Seager. And it's something I thought about, Danny, on the drive into work today. You know, with Kyle Seager, you have a guy that's in the spot where if the Mariners do well, he's definitely someone that they would consider trading for prospects. But there's a part of me that wonders about if he continues to play the way that he has played to open up this year, if that's a conversation that you reassess. If that's a conversation, when you look at him, you get to the trade deadline, you think to yourself, okay, we're probably not going to re-sign you at the deal that you've been making, but would you want to stay here? Even with the comments with Kevin Mather that he made, he's out of the organization right now. If he performs, I do think that you have to consider keeping him, because last year I thought he played really well. And to open up this season, I don't know if it's necessarily playing up to the contract that he's getting paid, but I mean, a 4-for-4 day with 2 home runs, that's what you're paying a guy almost $20 million a year for.
Yes, it's a promising start. And the idea that he's because of the way his contract works, where if you trade him, another year gets added onto it. If they trade him to another team, he would have it. It essentially adds another year that becomes guaranteed. Whereas if he stays here, the contract expires at the end of the season. I'm not sure you're going to be able to trade him. And if you do, if it would be actually a net financial, like, are you going to be able to get a prospect for that? And I agree with you. I don't think it should be assumed that he's done here. And I think anybody that's making that assumption, he could still be a productive and essential player. And not only that, he's not blocking anybody right now.
No.
Right? You still have a long-term question about where Ty France fits. Where's Ty France going to play on the infield? And third base is one of the possibilities. And Ty France hits well enough, he could be your third baseman. But that's a legitimate question still about where does Ty France fit. Like, you don't have somebody that you're slating like, hey, I hope this guy ends up taking his spot there. So I would agree with you. And right now, your two best hitters are Mitch Haniger and Kyle Seager, with Ty France also being factored into that discussion. And that shouldn't come as a surprise. You've got a lot of other young guys that are around them. But if those guys are the anchors in your lineup and the cornerstones, it does sort of lead to that question of where exactly are you in this rebuilding process? Are you close to turning the corner? Because if you are, those guys might be pieces. Seager and Haniger, both, especially Haniger, but even Seager could be pieces of your return to the playoffs. They could be guys that you're banking on to continue to be contributing members when you get this team back to the postseason.
As far as age for players, at what age do you start to have reservations about contract extensions for position players? Because Seager is 33 years old. You know, if we're talking about this in the NFL as a quarterback conversation, we're totally fine with somebody that's at that phase of his career. For baseball, for a third baseman, not an outfielder or anything like that, and not a guy that you're thinking about athleticism with him, at what point do you start to think to yourself, okay, like, I know that the diminishing returns are coming?
He's at that point. And he signed a contract coming off of a high point in his career. When the Mariners extended him, they did it on the belief that, hey, this is the first step toward, you're going to take another step after this as a hitter. And he didn't. He overall didn't. I think that the idea that he hasn't lived up to the contract, I think gets exaggerated by people. He's a guy that plays every day. He's a guy that has been very productive. I think he made decisions about his approach that prioritized power over some of the flexibility in defense, but also some of the average. He's been a starting caliber to above average major league third baseman. They paid him with the hope that he was going to grow into an MVP candidate type of player, and he didn't. He's not going to get a raise. That's not going to happen here. But that question of can he continue to contribute, and maybe even as some of the playing time lessons, he's not blocking somebody.
Right.
You don't have a guy that you automatically plug in. There's still some things to be sorted out about where this shapes into long term. But as far as, hey, do you continue banking on him being that cornerstone? No, you're going to have alternatives, but don't rule it out. And it's not. And that's where I would say with Felix Hernandez, you knew that he wasn't going to be part of the next group. With Gene Segura, and this was mostly because of how he got along with teammates, you knew he wasn't going to be part of the next contending group. Robbie Cano, with his salary, you knew. Like, all of those things you knew. That's not necessarily true with Seager. That's not necessarily true. He's going to be in a different role, and he's going to have a different, if he stays, will be in a different place. But this is encouraging about how he's played. Like, this is, and he does tend to start slow. That has been a career-long tendency. It doesn't always happen, but it usually happens. And Mitch looks like the man. And Mitch looks absolutely awesome. And so you might have the luxury of that's not necessarily guys that you're looking to offload, but guys that you feel could still be part of this equation, maybe in not as primary roles, but could still be part of this equation when this team gets good.
The Dodgers have a ton of money. A texter has brought up the idea of you bring Corey Seager in. I would be curious to know if Kyle Seager could make maybe the Mariners look like a more attractive destination, say Corey Seager actually did make it to free agency, though I doubt that they would want to get into the kind of bidding war that it would take to get a Seager or a Carlos Correa. I would advise it, though, because I think at shortstop, you know you need to upgrade over J.P. Crawford.
Yeah, but, well, A, Crawford, we'll see. He started, he had a little, you've got a question about whether or not Crawford's going to be your shortstop next year. The challenge, and this is the reason you don't want Correa or Seager, is because Noelvé Marte is on the horizon, and he's a potential star. So you don't want to pay the 5, 6, 7, or 8 years of top-tier money that guys like, I mean, Correa might even be wanting a 10-year contract. You don't want to pay that when you've got a potential value coming up in Noelvé Marte and a potential star. But I would agree with you. That question of where does if they're going to pay, I want it to be for pitching, man. Like, maybe the Astros example is too fresh in my mind, but I kind of feel like if you're going to pay for veterans, do it with arms, man. Do it with arms that have already been here and established. And we saw how the Astros were able to do that with Verlander and Cole, to a lesser extent with Charlie Morton. Like, if you're going to pay veterans, pay for arms.
Yep. I think that's probably the smart way to go about it. But at the same time, when there is somebody available like that, I do think they should be in on some of these, because yeah, you have a guy in Marte who might at some point be something special, but it's might. Yeah. And mm-hmm. I do think at some point, too, I don't know if it's necessarily important for the team to do this from a, hey, this is the best way for us to return. But at some point, wouldn't you like to see a commitment to spending the big money? Does that matter for an organization to flex that publicly? Because I would imagine for the fan base, definitely. But for other prospective free agents down the road, is there any added benefit of deciding to go big on one guy randomly?
I want you to pay your own guys. Like, that's the ideal thing. Buying another team's... Point to me a team that has bought another team's free agent, like that has won free agency and come out better for it. Because the examples are few and far between. I mean, the Phillies did that with Bryce Harper. The Padres with Manny Machado, that's vaulted them into a different category. We'll see if that pays off. But you look around the league, the Mariners, when they did it with Robinson Cano, like, that tends to be fleeting. Who else? Prince Fielder, when he ended up getting signed. Like, there's a lot of examples that when you spend big, Josh Hamilton, Albert Pujols.
Isn't Cano different, though? Because Cano was in his 30s, right? I mean, it's a little bit different with Robinson Cano than it is with someone like a Corey Seager who's 27 years old.
Yeah, but man, I don't want to pay someone else's free agent.
I understand I don't think we can look at the Cano contract as being this, like, big, oh boy, they did this, and now they can never go after a free agent again because of it.
Well, I'm just saying in general, when you sign someone else's big free agency, and that goes back to Alex Rodriguez and the Texans. Scott Servais, who did get thrown out, I liked to hear how irritated. I like it when managers get feisty, when they just get sick of it. And I think that Scott Servais had just had his fill of this umpiring crew, Laz Diaz's umpiring crew. He ended up getting tossed late in the game after a warning was administered, and Scott explained it afterwards, and you could hear the perturbance in his voice.
Yeah, I just thought it was ridiculous to give us warnings. He hit Buxton with a changeup, and I think if you're watching the game, you realize, like, if you're going to throw at somebody, you don't throw at somebody with a changeup. You throw at somebody with a 95-mile-an-hour fastball. So it's just a matter of being frustrated. They just need to watch the game and have a little bit more game awareness there. No excuse. I probably shouldn't have got thrown out there, but once in a while, your emotions get the best.
Don't you think it's kind of funny how we differentiate, though? Like, the dude still got hit. The changeup or a fastball. Okay, it's a difference of 20 miles per hour. It still hurts. As if the 20 mile per hour is going to be that much of a difference. Either way, you did throw at the guy.
See, what I love, they were not trying. I don't know if they were trying to hit Ty France. They were definitely trying to throw up and in. And I think you've got a responsibility as a pitcher that if you're going to do that, you have to be able to execute it. And that guy clearly couldn't. To the point where after missing upside and in, and brushing him back, he then hit him. Like, the Twins are owed one for that.
Watch the game. Show a little bit more awareness. Like, it was just like, I have had enough. I've had a belly full. 9 games with these dudes. I have had enough with these guys. I was thoroughly entertained. You could hear, yeah, I probably shouldn't have get thrown out. But, yeah, have a little bit more awareness of it. It is Danny and Gallant. We'll get back to the Mariners coming up in 15 minutes. But right now it's time to go around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
What's going on, Mora Dooley?
Hey, guys. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday.
I guess I already talked to you a little earlier. This is usually my debut for the day. But we did the dating game.
Dating game was fun.
Good. Glad you guys liked it.
Dating game was a blast. We need to do that again.
Yes, we will. Let's see. First up, apparently there is some drama with the Eagles. An athletic report by Sheil Kapadia details dysfunction within their organization. A source told him Peterson was reportedly forced to sit down with owner Jeffrey Lurie and general manager Howie Roseman every Tuesday, meetings in which his decision-making was regularly questioned and criticized. They treated him like a baby, one source said. Another source said, quote, the fact that Doug had the success he did with all the, I'm going to censor this to stuff, going on in the building, sometimes I look at our Super Bowl rings and I'm like, holy cow, I don't know how we did it.
Howie Roseman, every single thing that we have seen over the last year in the Eagles, I think can be traced back to him. And I am surprised that this guy who has really been cockroach-esque in that he has survived and survived in Philadelphia despite all of those changes, it really makes me wonder, like, why have they committed to him? And is Howie Roseman just really close with the owner? Whatever the case, it feels like that's a situation that has gotten to a point where now all of a sudden you can only hire Nick Sirianni to be your next head coach.
It's very strange that you're going to have Howie Roseman survived. He got demoted, right, when Chip Kelly was there, and then he rose again after Kelly. Like, that's not usually the way you described it as a cockroach, and that's very usually when a guy loses power, he's out at that franchise.
Right.
Like, he never gets back in the catbird seat, and Roseman clearly is.
That sounds miserable. If you're Doug Peterson who gets called in on Tuesdays to have your fourth down decision-making questioned, because there would be a big, like, okay, you want to do it? Like, either I'm your coach or I'm not. He'd won a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Like, if you're Doug Peterson, like, why am I doing, that's the decision I made. I'm not going to sit here and justify myself to you. Like, I made that decision and that's what you pay me to do. And if you don't want me to make that decision, then fire me and pay me my contract.
If it's Hugh Jackson, I understand this. If it's a Super Bowl winning coach, I don't.
You know what? Actually, I agree with you. I agree with
you're
you.
You're not winning, like, any games, like, right? Hey. Exactly. Like, you need to be. You need to have these meetings. We'll talk about him. But Doug won the Super Bowl, and I mean, they had so many injuries the last couple of years as well. Why are you focusing on the decision making as much as maybe your, I don't know, training staff, amongst other things?
He won the Super Bowl against Bill Belichick with a backup quarterback. Like, that should give you some cred.
Yeah. Even Simba agrees.
Yeah, Simba's fired up. It's like, that's right. Don't you treat Doug Peterson like that. Get at me, dog.
DMX, let's go.
All right, guys. This one is interesting, to say the least. Netflix is making a movie about Sean Payton's time coaching his son's sixth grade football team in 2012, while he was suspended from the NFL for his role in Bountygate. The movie is called Home Team. It's being produced by Adam Sandler's Happy Gilmore Productions, and Peyton will be played by Kevin James.
Of course. I can't imagine Kevin James as Sean Payton, though. That's not believable. I'm sorry. Kevin James is forever Paul Blart.
Yeah, I agree. You can't be the mall. I agree with that. Kevin James, that is his character. It's you. And if I was Sean Payton, I would not agree to allow my story to be told with Kevin James playing me.
It's very bizarre. But, of course, if the Sandler mafia rolls in, then it's probably going to make a lot of money. People are going to watch it. And, unfortunately, of late, it's probably going to be a little bit underwhelming from a comedy perspective.
I watched White Tiger.
What did you watch?
White Tiger.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
It was good?
Yeah, on Netflix. Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Okay, maybe I got to reevaluate my takes on Adam Sandler movies.
Ooh, yeah, I haven't seen that one.
Oh, no, that's not an Adam Sandler movie. It was a Netflix movie.
Oh, my bad.
Still, we'll have to check it out.
I was about to say, like, White Tiger doesn't sound like something that Adam Sandler would put together. Though, you know what? You got to give him a lot of credit for the Diamond movie, which is, I'm forgetting the name of it already. It's probably not a good sign.
Uncut Gems.
Uncut Gems. Great movie. Anyway, sorry, Maura. Continue.
No, that wasn't great. That was depressing.
I like
it. You're like the only person I've heard say that.
I thought it was a good movie.
It's dark. It's, I can see why people think it was good. It's dark, man. That's a dark movie.
All right, guys. Jonathan Jones is reporting that the Browns and Jadeveon Clowney are expected to strike a deal today. Do we actually believe Clowney is signing a deal before training camp this year?
I'm just so glad that I don't have to care about Jadeveon Clowney's offseason decision making. Oh my gosh.
How tough was
Never
that?
Has been so much ink been spilled over a dude that did so little as Jadeveon Clowney last year.
We do have a
You remember that? That was like 4 months of our lives. 4 months of our lives. Are they making a mistake not bringing it back? Oh my gosh, who are they going to get to be a pass rusher? That dude did nothing last year.
It wasn't just 4 months of my life, Danny. This was two off seasons in a row where I was having the exact same conversation. Yeah, I'm so happy I'm beyond it, even though I do miss Jadeveon Clowney, especially because Jadeveon Clowney made fun of Eagles fans to my mom. Indirectly.
That was funny.
That was a fun moment. And Jadeveon Clowney, that's really the main reason, Danny, I think I wanted to bring it back. This is our guy. He's going to give us content. Text in. Remember when Paul wanted to pay Clowney? I know. I honestly, no, wouldn't mind him back. But at this point, that's not happening.
Well, more news keeps coming out in the Deshaun Watson case or allegations. Deshaun Watson's lawyer, Rusty Hardin, acknowledged during a Friday news conference that there were some consensual encounters, according to him, between Deshaun Watson and some of the 22 women who have filed lawsuits against him.
So, what's the scenario here? What's the scenario in which Deshaun Watson is not a sexual predator? Or guilty of sexual impropriety? That's my question when this comes out. There are 22 women who have accused him in court in civil suits of him behaving inappropriately. There is one woman who has given her account, which is fairly consistent with what we've seen in the court filings, in which he commissions and hires a massage without indicating that it's an erotic massage or that there's it's just massage therapy, what athletes go through. Proceeds to dictate terms in which he has a private entrance. Only he will be nude. He will have only a towel instead of a sheet used to drape him. And then behaves in a sexually inappropriate manner with the masseuse, who tells him to stop doing it. He then solicits massage from her, services from her twice more, in which she says, "Hey, dude, you've already gotten a massage from me, and I don't do erotic massage." So is it his defense is that these were all erotic massages, and now it seems to me very clearly that he behaved in a completely inappropriate manner, sexualizing what was hired as a massage therapy, to work on his muscles, like a professional service that he then made sexual.
And I think it's probably a disastrous admission for Deshaun Watson that some of these did lead to consensual sex, because there is a very slippery slope, I think, that you can walk down when you start to talk about what is and what isn't. If it's happening at some of these massages, then it's probably an expectation that he may have. And if there's an expectation, that's where it might get into the, oh, well, he was trying to make this happen. I was surprised Rusty Hardin said that on Friday in the press conference.
And then there's two things that come up then is, and the most important from my perspective is there consent? Did these women who are performing the massages provide consent? And it seems very clear from the 22 women who have filed suit against him that they are no, we did not consent to this sexualized massage. The other part is, even if there is consent, it's still illegal, right? It's still illegal to commit, or you're just saying, oh, he had a massage and things got carried away, because it's, you can't hire sexual service.
Right.
That's not legal.
Right.
Ugh.
My exact reaction.
All bad, man. All bad.
Every single detail that comes out, it just gets creepier and creepier at the least, if not just disgusting. So.
Yeah. And every example is Deshaun Watson looking more and more guilty of sexualizing the situation, first of all,
yep,
of not considering whether there is consent or not, like not actually asking for or seeking consent, but just pushing boundaries. And then finally, just being completely inexplicable, his explanation for what happened initially of, I've always treated a woman with respect. Wasn't that the statement he gave?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's very clearly a lie.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's Danny and Gallant. We'll get back to baseball. Your Mariners are on the comeback trail. They're clobbering dingers. They're absolutely on a tear as they head to Baltimore. That's next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Bellamy, deep side, delivers. Here's a swing and a fly ball into right center field and deep, going back as Buxton looking up, and this one is gone. Goodbye, baseball. It kept going and going and going. Kyle Seager with a three-run home run here in the top of the ninth inning. Second home run of the day. Drives in his second, third, and fourth run of the ball game, and the Mariners now lead it 8-6. Holy smokes, what a comeback for the Mariners this afternoon here in Minnesota.
Belief is one of the essential ingredients for a young team to be successful. The belief and confidence that comes. And in that regard, the Mariners' ability to pull off a couple of these comebacks, I think, is hugely important for this team. They've now, in three of their five wins, they've come back from what I would consider significant deficits in the latter half. They were down five runs in the season opener. They were down three runs, down 4-1. Entering the second half of their game against the White Sox, the final game in that homestand where they salvaged the win, and then this one where they were down 6-0 and they ended up clobbering their way back into it. Those sort of moments, they're really important, especially for young teams. And the one part about this that we haven't talked about is that it's actually the bullpen should get some credit too, because the bullpen has kept the Mariners in these games and has not given it back late. Now, hasn't been perfect in that regard, but the bullpen, if of all the different aspects, the bullpen's been the most improved part of this team through nine games.
Yeah, you can't have these comebacks if the bullpen isn't holding on a little more tightly than it was last year. And last season, I mean, Danny, it was a problem. How often did we see this team looked like they were going to get a win, and the bullpen steps in and struggles. So there are some, I think, real positive signs from the bullpen, but it's not something I want to turn into, you know, this is all of a sudden like the Yankees or some of the top contenders who can trot out a bunch of guys there. But to your point, yeah, you're right. I mean, it was a rough start for Chris Flexen, and in comes Will Vest, our guy. He's been really good. Two innings of scoreless work. Steckenrider bounces back after his rough outing with the scoreless inning, and Rafael Montero at the very end of it. It was a nice performance because, yeah, with Flexen and his start and with the hole that the Mariners found themselves in so early, you're sort of thinking, oh, this is just going to get worse.
It didn't get worse. And not only that, but the Mariners stirred to life. And afterwards, Scott Servais talked about these sort of games being fun, that these are the sort of moments, and I do believe that, and I think it helps that this was on the road. I think when you've got a young team on the road and that getting a group to believe in itself, because the one thing that a young team has on its side is the expectation of improvement. You can look at it and say, you know what, this lineup overall is going to get better as the year goes along. That's not always true with teams, and especially with older teams, it necessarily, you can look at it and say, I worry how these guys are going to fade over the course of it. A young team, especially if that young team starts gaining confidence. When Jerry DePoto was on with us last week, he talked about that we always think of growth as some sort of linear process. It's not. Usually it's jumps. Usually it's a player getting, and all of a sudden something clicks for him. And whether it's a technique, whether it is a confidence issue, like, you see these incremental jumps. And the key to getting a young team to overachieve is getting guys to make those jumps, getting them to make those jumps as soon as they can. And I would say that's why comebacks like this, I don't know how many more games they're going to be able to dig out of a five-run or more deficit in the final three innings. Like, that's not a very sustainable way to go about. But I do know this, that the fact that they've done it now for a second time is going to give these guys confidence and make them feel better about themselves. And I think that's what Scott Servais was talking about when he said afterward and talked about how fun these games are.
Those games are fun because it's really easy to pack it in. You know, things aren't going our way. Doesn't look like you got much of a chance, but you keep grinding, you keep having good at-bats, and get some young guys gaining some confidence here. Nice win.
It's good to have a young team for those situations. And you, I think you laid it out very well there. I think it's a little bit of a different look at things. Maybe if you're complacent or you're a vet and you've been around for a while, you approach those situations a little bit differently. This team has just been annoyingly scrappy for, and the Giants found out the hard way, and now the Twins found out the hard way. If they can continue to keep this patient approach that they have at the plate as well, that's going to go light years for them. Because, I mean, right now you're doing this with a lineup that has some pieces that you think are going to be here in the future, but not many. And just stay true to that process, and the guys who come up are going to see it in action, and they're also going to end up succeeding because of it.
And watching Kyle Seager, because Seager is going to have to be a linchpin for this team.
Yep.
Seager and Haniger are going to be guys, especially early in this year, that you do lean upon to provide some consistency. It was great to see him get, whether it was some confidence that he gained over, but he's hitting better. And to clobber his first two home runs the way he did, he started it and then he finished it off. The solo home run in the sixth got the scoring going, and then the three-run homer later in the game, which put the Mariners ahead and actually ended up, they should feel really good. That's a good Twins team. And that's a good Twins team that is playing well. And Seattle was able to sort of clobber their way back after getting knocked around a little bit in the series opener. They get an off day Friday and then Saturday and Sunday. Not only salvage the series, but they take some momentum with them as they go on the road to Baltimore.
Yes, they do. And Baltimore is one of those teams where you can continue to feast. And what, where do you find yourself after a series with Baltimore? Maybe all of a sudden after four games you find yourself a couple games over 500, and I do wonder what starts to happen then. I wonder how that changes maybe their thought process. It does seem like they are going to just be consistent to what they wanted to do going into the year regardless of the outcome to open things up, but this has been a nice start, and I really enjoy that all of a sudden now the lineup is finally showing up, because to this point it was rough. I mean, you know, that comeback against the Giants I think was largely the Giants just barfing on themselves.
Yeah, and in this game, it was the Mariners breaking out the home run sticks and being able to clobber their way back into it. Taylor Chmiel hits his first two home runs over the weekend, homers on Saturday and then again on Sunday. He's also, he lets his emotions show.
I love it.
I love it. Like, there is sort of like this, it's there's a joyfulness to him. Like,
yes,
there is an excitement. Like, you see it. It's not so much, because usually baseball players are the too cool for school type. Like, especially the studs. They're like, I don't get too high, I don't get too low. Some guys are like, I just don't show any emotion at all, I'm entirely hanged up. And Taylor Trammell is like, can you believe how much fun this is? Like, there's a certain amount of watching him where you could tell, like, he even laughs at himself when he's trying to play it cool.
Yeah, he was trying to play it cool on his first home run. And I could tell he was trying to play cool on that first home run. And then he gets around third base, and then you see him start to smile. I don't think it's possible for him to keep a straight face the entire time. Would have been more funny if the clubhouse didn't actually give him any welcome like you sometimes see when a young player hits a home run. They're like pulling a prank on him. But yeah, the guy plays with the joy, and it's fun that you have players like that. You want to have people that actually look like they're enjoying it. I hate that about baseball. Like, there's this code that you're not supposed to look like you're enjoying it. Why? It's very strange.
Yeah, I wondered if there was a little bit, because Taylor did kind of stand in the box a little bit. Like, he watched that second home run he hit yesterday, which he should have, because he clobbered it. And then Shoemaker was yelling at the ump, and I couldn't tell, like, was he becoming the old grouch? And it sounds like Shoemaker was actually angry about something that had happened two at bats earlier, which I was like, why are you yelling at the ump about that? That pitch changed the whole inning. I was like, no, it didn't. It's the split finger that you left up there that was about belt high that he just clobbered that changed the whole inning. It is Danny and Gallant. We're going to raise flags. That's coming up next.
From the pocket and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
This is that time we take stock of all that's happened over the course of our first 3 hours of the work week this morning. Getting back to it. The Mariners on the road still. Basking in the afterglow of a couple of wins, including a pretty incredible comeback. Paul, would you like to start?
Yes, I would like to start, actually, here. You know what I'm going to raise my flag to? I'm going to raise my flag to Washington State basketball. Our beloved Cougs landing Michael Flowers, who scored 21 points a game at South Alabama. He's transferring to Wazoo. He's not transferring to UW. Just wanted to point that out.
Can't blame him. Six dudes leaving UW, including Hamir Wright, who over the weekend was interviewed on a podcast I saw with Noah Dickerson. He used to be saying that he regretted hanging around at UW, and I can't say he's wrong about that. That program is steered directly into the dirt, although I'm not sure if the main problem was that Hamir Wright just didn't get put in the right role. He kind of never learned to shoot, which isn't great. It happens. But, yeah. Yeah, no, that's very fair, Paul. You're right. If I was given a choice about which program I was going to transfer to right now,
here it comes.
I think Washington State is more. They at least have an identity.
Yeah,
like they understand what's going. I have no idea what's going on with UW's basketball team right now. No clue.
I don't understand why they. And I, look, we've talked about how it's probably a monetary thing as far as why they are not being, I think, aggressive in terms of assessing the problem. And look,
canning him?
Yeah, and canning Mike Hopkins, who we've talked to. I like him. He's a Syracuse guy, but, I mean, it's clearly not working. And it might work for him elsewhere, but it's clearly not working here specifically. I mean, there are good players here. There are good players locally. And, yeah, I get it. I mean, the Zags are a much better program in state, but it has gotten to the point where Washington State has surpassed them in basketball.
It's they go to a year where they get two freshmen who end up leaving after a year, which was totally foreseeable at the time that both those guys are going to bail. I get that, and I understand that, hey, maybe that results in a step. What I don't understand is how you had a year in which you accomplished so little and then completely wiped the table clean. All those dudes are leaving. Like, there wasn't any building that was going on. Like, that was just a non-year. And I don't know how you do that in the Pac-12 and keep your job. Like, honestly, like where you just like, hey, we didn't bring anybody that's going to stick here, and we didn't build anything at all. Like, this was basically just an entire, we want a mulligan, and we're going to start from scratch next year, which is essentially what they're going to do. And maybe Grant Jackson is going to be a player that they put in place, but all these dudes leaving. Jayron Brooks, somebody who was supposed to be a player, he's gone. Hamir Wright's gone. Eric Stevenson, who I was led to believe was going to make an impact as he transferred back here from Wichita State, he's in the transfer portal.
You had NBA talent last year, too. Yeah, sorry.
You're raising a flag to the Cougs, and I end up just throwing a flag on the Huskies. Maura, save us from this college basketball quagmire.
All right, Danny, I am going to raise a flag for you for rolling with all of the technical difficulties that you've had today, and also for the fact that sometimes when it slowed your voice down today, it reminded me of one of my favorite scenes from the movie Old School.
You're crazy, man. You're crazy. I like you, but you're crazy.
There's a dart in your neck.
You gave us a little of those vibes just for like a minute or two at times today because of your technical issues.
Yeah. Right. The funniest part is when people yell at me over the text for that. Like, fix your internet. Like, how would you propose I do that, sir? Like, am I not whipping the hamsters hard enough to run in the wheel that turns the power for this? How do I fix the internet?
You got to call those goons.
Fix your internet connection.
ATT.net, you got to get Clayton on it.
Yeah, if you had Clayton on it, man, I think it would be taken care of right away. Right away.
Do you think that's something that's in my wheelhouse of capability? Or should I open up the wall and say, oh, I see what the problem is. I fixed my internet. Good Lord.
I have enjoyed some of the descriptions, though, of what your voice sounds like. One person suggested it sounds as if you are chopped and screwed right now. For those who don't know.
Yeah, I like that one.
A very specific style of rap in Houston, and it's basically you remixed it and just slow everything down. It's supposed to go along with certain things that used to be imbibed in
lean.
The 90s.
Lean.
Drank. Right.
Lean.
Some
Isn't
lean.
It called lean?
Yeah, it's called lean. Purple drank. Purple stuff. Yeah. Scissor.
So, and that's composed of
there
Sprite,
it is.
Codeine, and Jolly Ranchers?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Or any candy. I wouldn't know. this is basically my historical observations of it, having lived in Houston and actually having several Chopped and Screwed rappers on my show because we were trying to introduce me to music. I had Slim Thug on the show once. That was fun.
Did you really?
Yeah. Oh, ESG. Slim Thug. Yeah, it was great. It was Slim Thug and ESG for an hour, and I had no, like, I just completely blind, knowing nothing about any any of their music. I was just like, so what's rap like?
Oh, God.
It was a lot of fun. They
that
were very good sports.
Danny's heart.
Rappers lead interesting lives, man.
Yes, they
like,
do.
I would say that the people that I've talked to in this world that I think lead them, fighters, pro fighters, which primary, I don't know as many boxers, but the UFC fighters who I've gotten to know and met, and rappers lead extraordinarily interesting lives. Like some of them, like dudes, even when they leave the business, what they end up doing after that, how they feel about what it was, like rappers and fighters have incredibly interesting lives. I'm going to raise a flag to Paul. This is his birthday yesterday.
Oh,
you've turned. How do birthdays count in quarantine land? Like, do they count? Like, you've had two quarantine birthdays.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that this one feels significantly better than the last
one. Oh, this was way better than the last one. The last one was terrible. I couldn't go anywhere. The last one, I was just like, all right, I just moved here, and I'm just keeping it to myself. I played Xbox for, like, 20 hours straight or something like that to enjoy it properly. Yeah, it was a good time. Nice weather yesterday. Watched the Masters and the Mariners at the same time in my little 2-TV setup with some friends. Impromptu karaoke. Good time.
Where'd you go to sing karaoke?
I was surprised that there was some karaokeing at Shingletown, a bar that is right around the corner from my apartment. It was towards the end of the night.
You're also not too far from the rickshaw, I think.
I don't think I've been there yet. I don't think I've been there.
The rickshaw is a classic, and maybe I'm dating myself because it's possible it's old enough that it's closed now, but the rickshaw is... What'd you sing last night?
I sang a Bob Seger song. Turn the Page.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Love Seeger.
It's a little
deep. Didn't yarl?
Yarling is something I can only do around my friends because I don't think everyone gets that I'm doing it ironically. I think some people are like, oh, wow, he's really serious with this. So it's one of those tricky things.
Happy birthday, Paul.
Thank you, buddy.
Belatedly.
Appreciate that.
Yes, happy birthday, Paul.
Thanks, Maura. It was a good time.
Well, appreciate everybody soldiering with us through the technical difficulties. Hopefully that is going to be ironed out for tomorrow's show. Otherwise, maybe we will have a Chopped and Screwed Danny and Gallant.
It's doing it right now. Remix! It's so good. I really enjoy this. I mean, I feel bad for you dealing with
Flip
these
it
difficulties.
Up, smack it.
But it's making me laugh very, very much inside.
Thank you to the Professor John Clayton. Maura Dooley kept us on the straight and narrow. And Paul Gallant is going to be your tour guide for the next hour of mayhem. That's next.
So long, farewell. You'll hear Danny and I tomorrow at 7.